Welcome to a summer episode of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, I'm your host, Tyler, joined by Matt. We have a very special guest today. Many of you will remember him as the point guard for the St. Joseph's Hawks, or maybe even as the point guard of the Delaware Blue Hens, or as a high school star in the Philadelphia area. Ryan Daly is joining us today to talk about his time as a hooper and his upcoming role playing for the Big Five TBT team. Ryan, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate you guys and, you know, the whole Twitter, A10 Twitter. You know, it's fun, you know, interacting with you guys. It's really good that you guys give the attention to the league that it deserves.
Well, we're happy to hear that, especially from a guy that made it so fun to watch the league the last few years. And I want to start things off here because we got a whole ton of questions to hit with you, plenty of topics. But they all have one kind of central theme to them, and that is Philadelphia basketball. And that is just deep in your bloodstream. You grew up there. You made a state final for Archbishop Carroll. You went off to play at the University of Delaware, not that far away, for a coach in Martins Inglesby, who went to the same high school as yourself, then went back to St. Joe's, where your father played, including for a year for your grandfather, not his dad, but his future father-in-law. And you know what? This is something we see with Philly all the time. College basketball, rivalries are dying. People are going to play far away from home, but Philly kids stay in Philly and they play against the other Philly schools. So for you personally, why did you keep it at home all this time? Why has it been Philadelphia basketball through and through for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, I was born in a place called Delco. I don't know if you guys are familiar. It's about 5 minutes outside Philly. If you ever seen Mayor Easttown, it's basically storied around where I grew up. So that gives you a little idea of, you know, my background, where I'm from. But, you know, Philly's got a rich basketball history. You know, my dad was a high school coach when I was growing up. He was coaching the Catholic League at Monsignor Bonner. I grew up going to St. Joe's games, going to the Palestra, going to doubleheaders at the Palestra, going to Temple games. Any game in Philly that there was going on, I was there with my parents. And, you know, like you said, people from Philly, you know, they treasure Philadelphia basketball. You know, it's the biggest thing that Philly has. I would say the Eagles are one, and then college basketball is two. So I've always been drawn towards Philly basketball. And, you know, I didn't really know anything else except for when I moved when I was growing up, because my dad was coaching, you know, Boston University and then Penn State. So I had like 3 or 4 years outside of the area, and, you know, nothing even comes close to, you know, Philadelphia basketball. So for me, it was an easy decision when I was leaving Delaware. You know, Delaware might have been too far for me. So I ended up going to St. Joe's, and, you know, the rest is history. I loved my time there.
And it's funny, before we even set this up, I was reading John Feinstein's book, The Breaks of the Game, where he profiled the college basketball season a few years ago. And it happened to be the year while you were sitting out in between Delaware and St. Joe's. And he goes to cover a Delaware game and mentions that they lost their leading scorer from the year before, a guy by the name of Ryan Daly, and just kind of rips through all of your St. Joe's connections. And he made it seem like it was just basically divine destiny that you would end up at St. Joe's eventually.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I don't know if you guys know anything about my recruitment, but I didn't have a Division I scholarship offer until my last day of high school. So I really didn't even have my choice if I wanted to go to St. Joe's or not. I got lucky that Delaware had a new coach who I was familiar with, and there was a mass exodus in the program. But yeah, going out of high school, you know, I wish I went to St. Joe's. I wish I was offered a scholarship there by anyone in the Big Five. You know, Penn offered me originally, but they took my scholarship away from me when Ryan Bentley committed. And everyone else, I didn't have any, you know, scholarship opportunities. So, you know, Delaware was the only one. But once I knew I wasn't going to be at Delaware, probably midway through my second year, I was, you know, with my brother and my dad, you know, thinking of destinations. And once I was in the portal, or they didn't even have the portal then, but once I was officially able to transfer, the first person who was at my house making eggs or whatever was Coach Martelli. So I kind of knew that, you know, they were interested in me. And once I got that interest from there, I visited there. And, yeah, the rest is history. I committed on my visit and didn't look anywhere else. So, I mean, maybe it was fate. I guess it was, because I grew up going to camps there, overnight camp, you know, day camp, whatever it was. My birthday parties would be in, you know, I'd go to the game with all my friends and I'd get to go in the locker room after. So, like, you know, everything has been St. Joe's for me.
Yeah, so I'm glad that you mentioned that you were very lately recruited out of high school. And you look back in hindsight at what you accomplished in your career, and that seems just completely insane now. You made all conference in both the CAA and the Atlantic 10. So when you look back on your time playing college ball, and as other people look back and, you know, people flip into old box scores years from now, maybe you'll be coaching an ESPN game at some point and they'll go run a highlight tape of your days playing. So when that happens, what do you hope will be the first thing that people remember about your time as a college basketball player?
That's a good question. I hope people just realize that, you know, I was probably the biggest competitor I know. You know, I'm not the best athlete. I don't have the best three-point jump shot. I don't really have much I have some athleticism for, you know, an average person, but compared to those guys that I was playing against, I pale in comparison to them. So I think when they look back, I think, you know, from what I've been told or from what people will tell me, you know, I just kind of gave them a joy because – you know, anyone really, if you just were 6'4", you were probably as athletic as I was. You know, it wasn't anything God-given where you're jumping over people. I just played as hard as I possibly could, you know, through injuries, through whatever, through coaching changes, transfers, all that. You know, I had an interesting journey. I just hope people realize, you know, I really care a lot. And if I can be remembered as someone who cared a lot and competed the hardest, and I'm all good with that, regardless of, you know, the points or whatever I was known for.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that we'll all remember from watching your career. But I am glad you mentioned the coaching changes aspect, because you mentioned Coach Martelli was the one who initially recruited you to St. Joe's. But by the time you were able to step on the court, Billy Lang was the coach. So how did that transition go? I mean, it must have worked out pretty well because you ended up staying at St. Joe's for the rest of your college career. But what was that like, starting out at a new school? And then suddenly you have a completely different coaching staff.
Yeah, it was awful initially, to tell you the truth. Like they texted us a Sunday night at like 9 and said team meeting at 6 a.m. Monday. He made the meeting. So I kind of knew. I had a feeling, you know, most of the guys on the team, I don't know if they're, you know, follow basketball as closely as I did, but anytime a coach orchestrates a meeting like that, you kind of know it's something serious. And then he told us, you know, he's been like an uncle to me. I mean, he was on the staff and my dad played. He was at every one of my grandparents' funerals. He was at, you know, family weddings. He's everywhere to us. He's like an uncle to me. And it was tough because I knew I had just redshirted. I couldn't look at other options really because I had already burned my redshirt year. And at that point there was no portal still, I believe.
That
one-time waiver thing may not have applied to me, so I didn't look anywhere else. I was comfortable with the place at St. Joe's, that it wasn't worth it for me. You know, I didn't like the school of Delaware. I liked the basketball. I didn't like the school. It was a bad fit for me, but St. Joe's as a school was a great fit for me, so I knew I wasn't going to leave. But, like, you know, when I know Fresh Kimball was leaving, I knew Jared Bynum. You know, Jared Bynum wanted to stay. Some things didn't work out that way. He ended up leaving. And then Bones Highland, you know, he stayed with me on his visit. I knew he was committing. I knew he was coming. I knew that the whole time. And, you know, there was just a few things he had to put in place out of his control, but he was, you know, coming to St. Joe's, Akeem Hart. So we had some talent that I was going there for. You know, the administration decided that the results weren't good enough from that year, that 2018-19 year, I think it was. And they decided to make a change. And, you know, everyone else that I kind of envisioned playing with other than Taylor, Anthony, and Lorenzo left. So we were left with four scholarship guys. And I knew it was going to be an uphill battle from that moment because, you know, I felt bad for Coach Lang in the sense that, you know, when you're replacing a legend like that, you know, you're always going to get looked at a little weird. You know, people – not weird, but, like, they're going to be like – you know, this isn't what I'm used to for 24 years. You know, Phil was our coach. Now for a small school like that to just kind of change their identity. It was tough. But, you know, once I talked to Coach Lang, I was all on board, and, you know, I tried to do the best I could to kind of bridge between the old St. Joe's and, you know, this new era of St. Joe's.
Wow. And I'm just kind of running it through my head right now, the idea of Fresh Kimball, Jared Bynum, yourself, Bones Highland, and Jameer Nelson Jr., who I believe was also committed to St.
Jameer,
Joe's.
Yeah, Jameer would have gone to prep school a year and then came. But, yeah, he and then Hakeem Harvey starts at Maryland. He's averaged like 10 a game there, and Taylor. And yeah, I still sometimes think about that. You know, I don't know how anyone would have stopped us from scoring 85 to 90 points a game, truthfully. But, you know, the past is past, and, you know, I don't resent anything. I just, you know, sometimes I do think of that, you know, maybe my experience was different, but I wouldn't have traded, you know, the 3 years I had for the world. Coach Lang means a lot to me, and so it all worked out for me. But, yeah, sometimes I do go down memory lane and think about, you know, some of the players we had.
Yeah, I mean, that situation, you might have had to play some power forward with all the guards that team would have had.
That's what the understanding was when I came to St. Joe's. I agreed to that. I agreed to play in, you know, the four. I was strong enough that I could bang. And I figured if we had, you know, Jared, Fresh, Charlie, Bones, whatever it was, they would do all the scoring. I had already done my scoring in college. I came with 1,000. So I didn't need to score ever again. I just wanted to win. So, but yeah, I would have been small ball four.
So yeah. That rules perfectly into what my next question was going to be. So in reality, you end up on a team where you are the clear leader, the clear point guard, and the guy who was tasked with doing so much of the scoring. So I guess you basically kind of answered half of what I was going to ask, that you were envisioning a different role when you got there. You certainly had to change your game a little bit. So is that something that Coach Lang went to you and said, hey, Ryan, we're going to need you to carry the offensive load? Or is that something that you just kind of figured out along the way, like, hey, this is our best chance at success?
That's a great question. I think it's a little bit of both. Coach Lang had mentioned, you know, I'm thinking about playing you at point guard. And I literally was like, no, you're not. Like, that's not what I do. You know, I'll rebound, I'll score. But point guard, I've never done that before. And then he said it to my parents and my mom. You know, my mom's a straight shooter. She was like, no, he's not. He's not playing point guard in the A-10. Like, that's just not who he is. And then, you know, workouts came and went, or summer workouts, and I was like, all right, well, the ball's in your hands, man. You gotta figure it out. And so it was a little bit of both. He always thought that I was better than I thought I was, if that makes any sense. Like, I always put limitations on myself just athletically, or, you know, I knew I was going to be the most competitive. I didn't think I was, you know, good enough to run point guard in the A-10 for 35 minutes. And, you know, we split it a little bit, but, you know, I think if you guys watched the second half of most games, it was really just, you know, pick and roll for me and trying to make decisions out of that. And it grew my game. It made me a way better player. You know, Coach Lang made me a way better player in terms of my vision, in terms of how much I cared about, like, you know, my body, my, you know, just overall, he really, really helped with that. And, you know, he pushed me to a place that I didn't think was possible. I didn't think I would ever be able to have games with 9 or 10 assists a game. That just wasn't what I was. But, you know, he saw that in me. And yeah. And then the other part of it, I kind of knew once summer workouts were going, it was like, all right, you got to put the ball in the hoop for this team. Like, you, regardless if you're 0-for-30, you got to keep shooting, because, you know, some of these guys were inexperienced. We didn't really have much depth. It was always just, you know, figure it out. And that's what I kind of tried to do. And, you know, it didn't lead to as many wins as I would have liked, but I got better and I had a lot of fun playing, you know, with the new staff.
Yeah. And I mean, on top of playing for a new staff and learning an entirely different role than what you had done previously, you moved up, I would say, in conferences from the CAA, which is a solid mid-major conference every year. But I mean, we here at the 3-Bit League, we love the Atlantic 10. We consider it, you know, the premier mid-major or high power major. Eight. Yeah, Power 8, exactly. So what was that transition like, going to a stronger conference where you're probably seeing, on average, much tougher teams night in and night out in the winter?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, so my rookie year at Delaware, when I won all, so I won all rookie, I won rookie of the year. The two guys that were on the rookie of the year team with me are both in the NBA. And then there was two kids in the class above me who got drafted in the NBA. And then there was another kid who I played against who was an upperclassman who had a 10-day or two. So there were really good players in the CAA. I think basically you just have to assume if the wings are 6'4" in the CAA, they're 6'6" in the A-10. Mm-hmm. And if the bigs are 6'8" in the CAA, they're 6'10". And, you know, everyone's 2 inches bigger and a little bit longer and a little bit more athletic. And I would say that the one difference is that those schools in the A-10 breathe basketball. Like they, you know, Dayton, VCU, Davidson, Bonnies, like these are some major basketball schools. They don't have the football money. They don't have the football size, but they have the basketball love and resources and facilities that truthfully, like, I mean, we might not be a high major league in terms of 1-13 or whatever it is, but I think program wise, you know, there's 4 or 5 programs that I would put as high major. Like, you know, they can recruit against the big boys and they can come out on top. So yeah, it was definitely a step up overall, but there were some good players. Probably the best player I played against in college. Well, I thought Bones, when I've known Bones for a while, I knew he was going to be a first round pick, but then there's a kid from, you know, Hofstra who was that was a bad boy right there. He averaged like 27 a game, got drafted by the Jazz. But yeah, both leagues really good and competitive, probably more better than I even thought they were going to be, but you know, I had some success there, but it was a great journey, my 5 years.
So what's your best either story or memory related to your time playing college basketball, whether it's on the court or something off the court with your teammates that you can tell on the pod?
I would say the craziest memory was probably when I hit the shot against Davidson with the 1 foot. That was the pretty unpredictable. You know, I was number one on top 10 that day. I didn't think that was possible given that I couldn't dunk. So I never thought I'd find myself there. Memory wise, as a team, I think probably when we beat UConn on the road at St. Joe's, game 3 of that 2019-2020 season. I think that was – we beat Bradley. I played well. We beat – where we lost Old Dominion. I played bad. I almost had a triple-double, actually, but I was 2-for-14 from the field. It was awful. And I missed 2 free throws that, you know, mattered. And then we went on the road and won at UConn. And, you know, Hurley was cursing me out, and I'm cursing back at him. And, you know, we won that one. And that was a really fun memory for the team and for Coach Lang. I knew it meant something because it was like his stamp. Like, okay, we just won on the road at UConn. That's a pretty big deal, you know.
I remember watching the Bradley game, actually, more so than the UConn game, and just thinking it because it was so early in the season. We didn't know what to expect from St. Joe's, and just thinking, I don't know about this team. This might be a rough year. And then that UConn game just completely turned around our whole perception. I'm pretty sure that led our episode that week. So
yeah, that was wild. That was really fun. That was, you know, Coach Lyon, you know, he came up to me before the game. He was like, you know, you're the best player on the court, right? And I'm like, all right, dude, like I have some confidence, but I never thought that anywhere I played at. And then, you know, that night I happened to be, and, you know, I know I still talk to some guys at UConn, you know, Christian Bidell and those guys, and they'll be like, yeah, you made us run the next week. You cooked us, so, you know, Coach Hurley was all mad. But, you know, a lot of fun memories like that, for sure, I think, about my time in college.
So we'll close out your time in college basketball with a few A-10 rapid fires. I want to start with this one because you were sometimes like a human wrecking ball going to the hoop. You just crashed into guys, a very old school playground game. So was there ever a game in your career where you played a full allotment of minutes and didn't feel like you needed an ice bath or anything after, because it seemed like you were taking a beating when you were
out there? No, there was never a game. I was always icing my legs. I couldn't even walk to my car after something. Like, I was – because for some reason, I don't know how, but you're 220 pounds or whatever I am. How do you always end up on the floor? And I would always have to run back and just exert a lot of energy just to get myself up. But, yeah, no, for sure. There was no easy games for me. And I didn't have much sleep or rest or, you know, a lot of recovery.
Yeah, and I mean, in your time in the A-10, you were always one of the most prolific scorers. But who would you say was the toughest player you had defend you in a game that you just had the most trouble getting to the rim and scoring against?
The toughest player? That's a good question. I think that when we played – the best game plan in my probably 4 years of college that I felt like I was literally hopeless was actually against Duquesne. I think that dude's an unreal coach, you know, X's and O's wise. He put something in there where we played them home, and I literally had like 5 shot attempts or something. Like, I couldn't even get them up. They were doubling me on the back downs. They were picking me up full court, getting out of my hands. I would say Duquesne, the hardest individual defender I played in the A-10. That's a good one. Vince Williams is pretty good. Vince Williams is long. Vince Williams can play. And then the stronger guys like Trey Landers, he was pretty difficult because he was probably, you know, I strength-wise, I didn't really have many problems with a lot of guys because I was always bigger, but like a football player, but he was stronger than me. That's a strong boy right there. So probably, you know, Trey Landers and Vince Williams.
Yeah, and so that was a good memory with the Duquesne game. Unfortunately, you did only have 3 points that game, but let's go to a happier memory. Off the top of your head, do you know what your career high was in the A-10?
Yeah, I do. St. Louis.
How many points?
32, maybe 35.
35, you got it. So, and that was only a couple weeks later, so.
I still talk to Jordan. Good. I always forget. We always talk about that. He's like, man, you made us go zone. Like, I couldn't do anything with you that night. I caught lightning in a bottle in that second half and hit a few threes. But, yeah, that was – I remember that.
So, Matt just asked you about the toughest guys to go against. Was there anybody, whether it was either a player or a team/coach, that you really, really wanted to amp it up against, really crush their team? And I'm not going to let you pick LaSalle because I'm going to make you go outside the Big Five here.
I was going to say Penn because I took my scholarship offer, so I gave them 30 and we beat them. But if I had to say who I wanted to play, I always wanted to play against Bonaventures, not because I thought they were easy, but because I think he's on a short list of 10 to 15 X's and O's coaches in the country. I think he's ridiculous basketball coach. So I always wanted to see what they were going to do either offensively or defensively to junk up a game, because that dude can really coach. And I know SUNY and I know Lofton pretty well, and Jaron, you know, I have a relationship with them through playing, so I always like playing them.
All right, one more rapid fire question for me. I know you never, I believe you never got to play at Dayton during your career, but I'm just curious, what was the best or your favorite arena to play at in the A-10?
That's a good question. I don't think I played at VCU except for the conference tournament. I don't think I played at Dayton. I would say Richmond. Those dudes, the Richmond, I liked Richmond. Richmond, we actually played them at Delaware my sophomore year, and I got teed up. They were chanting my mom's name. Like, they were, and we played, you know, and then we won at Richmond my senior year. So I won on the road at Richmond twice in my career and beat them at home once. So I think I might have had a winning record against Richmond, but, you know, I always like going down there because those fans care a lot. That's, you know, they live and breed Richmond basketball. And I really like St. Louis's arena.
All right, so we'll close out the A-10 talk with this, because we know you're paying attention right now. What do you expect to see from this year's St. Joseph's team?
I think Eric Reynolds will I don't want to say he'll lead the league in scoring, but I think he'll be close. I think people don't really understand how good that kid is. I think they'll be good. I think they can play. They have more speed than they had before. You know, they have 3 guards who can go by someone, which is big. And, you know, it's another year with Coach Lang, and Cam Brown's really solid. Educate played great for them last year. So I think they're going to be good. I actually do. You know, I think Coach Lang's got them in the right direction. You know, he's got I think this might be his first year where it's all his guys. Now that Taylor left. So they're going to play differently than they played. They were really big last year with Jordan at 6'8 and Taylor at 6'9. I would guess they get back more towards small ball. But I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But I think they'll be a tough out, you know, and pretty good.
All right, easy question here. Will the Hawk ever die?
No, come on. No, I might get that tattooed on me.
I once saw him flap his wings through a serious injury timeout. That man is dedicated. So
yeah, he'll keep flapping. And we had an injury when I was redshirting. I traveled at Duquesne.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, Checo. Yeah, that was like the grossest injury.
It was really brutal. I was there in person. So.
Injury, and he was sitting there doing this during the timeout while people are crying. I'm like, damn, dude. Like, wipe some tears from people's eyes if you're going to keep flapping them up and down.
So We'll transition in. You spent a year bouncing around the G League. You played a little bit for Maine last year, played a little bit for the really weirdly named Clippers G League team out in California. What was that experience like for you?
They just changed that from Agua Caliente to Ontario.
Yeah, they switched that this morning, I believe.
Yeah, it was a good experience. I need structure, and, you know, I'm better with structure. So the year was a little hard for me because I was bouncing around. You know, I went to Vegas, and I was with the Raptors, and then they got COVID, so I couldn't play in the Bull. And I was actually in Chicago for a month. I was signed, and I didn't get to play a game because we had two straight outbreaks. So I was cramped up in a hotel probably from, like, late October through January 15th. I was in a hotel room in a different city every 2 weeks. It was pretty wild, and I didn't do well with that, you know. And I had a few at the back end, you know, Golden State and Denver's G League team wanted to sign me towards the playoffs. I just had made my mind up that it wasn't for me in terms of, you know, there was no, it wasn't like college, you know. College, you have a set structure. You know where you're going to be, especially St. Joe's. We did a really good job. We were so organized and so detailed with Coach Lang that it was good. It was like a team. And then once – I only play basketball because I like being around my teammates and stuff like that. You know, I love that part of it. I didn't like – not that I didn't. I never really viewed it as a job. And I think everyone in the G League and in that NBA summer league where I was, it's their work. It's not like much team camaraderie. And I'm a big – you know, everyone come over to my house. We'll go play Xbox all night. And there just wasn't much of that. You know, I had some toughness dealing with that, and I wasn't ready to, you know, go overseas for – so I just, you know, gave it up. But I had a great time in the G League. They all treated me well. It just was a different different experience than I expected, to be completely honest.
Yeah, it was a year of both opportunity and bumpiness for the people in the G League. Some guys near the top managed to get some call-ups because of the COVID, because of players catching COVID, and – you kind of just gave us an example of the downside that things were just really unsettled. And if I'm correct, I believe the G League stopped playing for like 3 weeks at one point as well.
And I actually caught COVID. I went out to LA after Christmas. So I signed with LA before Christmas. We had two games scheduled. Everything got canceled for COVID. I had one workout and then I caught COVID. And the way they do it there, you have to get a certain score on your tests. So like they were driving me an hour and a half to the Clippers practice facility, like their actual NBA one, COVID swabbing me, driving me an hour and a half back. And I did that 4 days in a row. Took me like 15 days to be out of quarantine. And once I did, they were like, yeah, we're going to waive you for Chris Dunn. So I was like, all right, thanks for the hotel and the DoorDash credit. But so then I flew back to Philly, and then that, I think that was the last time I was signed. Yeah.
Yeah, and so you announced a few weeks ago, you put up a nice little message on Instagram that you were retiring from pro basketball. Yeah. And you didn't say it explicitly in the message, but you referred to yourself as Coach Rye. Yeah. So I assume that that is the next step on your basketball journey here, is coaching at some level.
Yes.
And so I'm just curious, given that your dad was a coach all over the place, he was at some high schools in Philly, spent time as a college assistant. I assume that coaching was something that you kind of always knew was where you were going to end up eventually.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, basketball's it, whether I'm playing or, you know, coaching or doing whatever. Basketball was always going to be it for me. You know, it's my love. I just love it. So, yeah, I'm going to be coaching. I have a decent idea of where, but I don't know for sure. So I've currently looked at some NBA opportunities and some college ones. So it'll be out there probably within a week. I just don't really know where for sure yet. I got to kind of decide.
So we won't try to get the details out of you here, but I will ask, if you try to envision 20 years from now, your dream coaching scenario, are you embroiled deep in an NBA playoff series? Are you battling for a spot in the Final Four, or maybe you just stay on home and try to put together some sort of PIAA dynasty out at a Philly high school?
Yeah, so I will say I will not be doing the high school route. I will be – so I think if it's coaching, I would say I'm leaning towards the Final Four. I would say that. I think if there's – you know, 20 years from now, maybe something happens front office, and that would appeal to me. You know, that's a long-term goal I have, to eventually be up there at some point. But college coaching for sure, I think, is number one on my list for, you know, ideal spots. Hopefully, you know, maybe I'm St. Joe's. I love that place. So we'll see. 20 years is a long way away.
Well, and we know if you're a good coach, eventually you'll find your way back to Philly. So
yeah, I expect
maybe not St. Joe's, but maybe we'll see a Drexel, LaSalle, Villanova, Temple. I'll leave out the last one for you.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem like an option at this point.
Yeah, we don't see there. Yeah, I'm just messing with that. But yeah, hopefully in the Big Five, it's awesome. I know there'll be a rabid fan base. You know, if it's in the city, you know, they have some diehards, man.
So we'll close everything out with a little discussion on TBT. You're going to be playing on the Big Five team, which is just as it seems, just a bunch of guys from either St. Joe's, LaSalle, Villanova, Penn, or Temple, coached by a guy that A-10 fans will remember, Khalif Wyatt from Temple. You guys are going to be playing up at Rucker Park, which feels right for your game. Maybe it's a heavy whistle. People just aren't quite getting fouls called. You're going to need to come out of there with a bunch of bruises.
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to playing in that?
Well, one, I'm really I felt, obviously I told you, you know, the Big Five following, you know, Khalif Wyatt was someone that I was like, wow, you know, he's built kind of similar to me. We weren't very athletic, you know, watching him shred those dudes and give Oladipo 30 and, you know, all the, and, you know, in the tournament and all that stuff. He was someone that I didn't think I would be, you know, in the A-10. I just didn't think I was that good growing up. But, you know, just being around those guys who really like, you know, Jordan Price, I remember him from LaSalle, Ramon Galloway, their Sweet 16 run. Dalton Pepper, I've known about him since he was, you know, in eighth grade playing with my cousin. You know, it's crazy that I made it to it's kind of like a wow, you know, you made it to a point where someone would want to play, someone on those teams would want to play with you. So it is rewarding. And I'm also looking forward to playing at Rucker. I think that's a cool experience I'll never forget. And obviously my career is done. I don't even really want to play anymore. You know, it wasn't because I didn't have some options overseas or in the, like, I truthfully just want to get my life started, and basketball gave me a lot. And, you know, I wasn't willing to go overseas or just keep living out of a hotel room. I needed some stability. So it'll be one little final send off, I think, competitive wise. Maybe I'll do it every year. Cause I'm still in shape, you know, I still work out, get some pickup in, but yeah, I'm just looking forward to it, man. It'll be crazy.
Seriously, so
dudes,
maybe it's this year. Maybe you are one of those guys who goes into coaching but keeps playing TBT the next few years. Over that time period, what's the biggest thing that you'd like to see happen, given that this is kind of your last hurrah as a player until you start torching semi-pro leagues and crushing people at YMCA?
I'll probably be first team all men's league wherever. I don't care what league it's in. I'll probably – it could be the best men's league. I think I'll be on first team, hopefully. No, I'm looking forward to just competing again. You know, it's been, you know, even in the G League, like I didn't, I don't want to speak for a lot of people, you know, but there are some people that are complacent there. You know, it's not like they want to win that. Like I get crazy. Like you see my hands, like they clench when it's competitive. And I think guys who are cut, the guys from Philly are cut from that cloth. You know, we don't back down. It doesn't matter if you're the one seed in the TBT or the eight seed, we're going to come out and try to play you as hard as we can. And I'm looking forward to, and, you know, the money, you know, people are like, you know, that's an incentive. That's why people are going to play hard and they're going to leave everything out there, because $1 million is a lot of money to split between 9 people or 10 people or whatever it is. So I'm looking forward to just competing with guys from the area, because I know they're cut from a similar mentality that I am.
Yeah. And by the way, for you to get to that big $2 million prize, I think that's what it is again this year. You get out of Rucker Park, you'd have to play your last 3 rounds in UD Arena. So your debut really? There may still be coming.
Really? Oh, yeah, in Dayton. I thought you meant Delaware for a second. Yeah.
Fake UD.
Yeah, I'll get my the fake UD. Yeah, I'll get finally a chance to play in Dayton. You know, those fans are crazy. I got a friend from high school went to Dayton. He said it's insane, that atmosphere out there. So hopefully they pack it in. Hopefully we get there, and hopefully they pack it in for us, because, you know, there'll be some A-10 guys playing on our team for sure. Does Dayton have a team this year?
Yep.
Who's on it? Like Ryan Mixell, is he on it?
As far as I remember, he's on it and Landers is on it. So that would be the guys from your era.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that'll be a good team for sure. I'm looking for. Hopefully we see him out there, and it's an away game, so we can get a sort of feel that we know what it's like out there.
And Josh Cunningham. No, I don't know if you and Josh Cunningham.
I redshirted. I remember him. He redshirted the year I was 18, 19. I think he was going. He's a big dude.
Yeah.
I remember his name. I never got a chance to play against him.
All right. So Big Five, you guys will be playing your first game July 16th at 2 o'clock at Rucker Park. I'm sure it's on one of the ESPN networks, even though it's not listed here. So just give me a prediction. And I want a very Ryan Daly-esque prediction for this game. How many free throws will you end up attempting?
It depends if the refs are giving me calls. The A-10 refs used to tell me, like, yeah, you got fouled, but you lead the league in free throws, so we're not just going to keep adding that. I'm like, I'm strong. Sometimes I get hacked, I just don't fall. So that's why I started falling. I think I'm going to get – I'll set the over I'll say you're 6. How about that? 6 in a pickup game, that's a lot. That's like 12 in college basketball, 15 with the hand check rule. So
yeah, that would be a lot. So
yeah, 6 in an outdoor court, that's a lot.
Yeah, everybody be sure to tune in to the Big 5 TBT game. And Ryan Daly, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Before we continue, quick error note. Breaks of the Game is a good book from the 80s about the NBA. The passage that I was referring to from John Feinstein was from the book The Backroads to March. Certainly worth checking out. All right, we wanted to take a few minutes after that to just talk about the schedule. The A-10 released all of the pairings for next season, which felt like it came earlier than normal, so credit to them on that. And credit to them, we got a lot of the good teams playing each other this year.
Yeah, I think this is what the fans ask for pretty much every year, and I think the A-10 really went above and beyond, if that's what we want. And I think the biggest takeaway, Dayton, Davidson, St. Louis, and VCU. So 4 teams that are expected to be near the top of the standings, all playing each other twice. And especially for Dayton and St. Louis, their final home and home pairing is Loyola. So those two teams in particular really didn't get an easy go of it with the home and homes.
Yeah, and Davidson's other one is Fordham, which I discovered when they put out the women's pairings is actually their rival, because they both geographically don't have a rival, so they just kind of got paired together.
I just assumed St. Bonaventure is Fordham's rival. Is that Duquesne?
St. Bonaventure's is Duquesne's.
Oh. Is Loyola, do they not get one? Now there's an odd number. I keep seeing 15 teams, though, when I'm seeing more and more people put out power rankings. I'm not getting used to the whole 15 teams thing. I think there's a mistake somewhere.
Yeah, and by the way, over in the women's, it's just a Midwest triangle. Dayton, Loyola, and SLU, because the women play less games, so there's only 2 home and homes, and so those 3 just play each other.
Okay, well, that's interesting. I am glad the A-10 didn't go to the 20-game schedule. It seemed like that could have been maybe pressured since there's now an extra team, but overall, do you think the A-10 got it right stacking the deck for these top teams, or do you think a more balanced approach would have been better for the conference in terms of getting teams to the tournament and potentially improving seedings?
They nailed it, because what matters is the top. It's all about tournament bids. We talk about this all the time. That's why we have our name, because it's all about just getting teams in. And we have learned over the years that the way to do that is to just play as many tough games as possible. And so playing the Pennsylvania schools or GW this year is not going to be helpful to Dayton or St. Louis or VCU if they're on the bubble, because you can go down to GW and beat them by 35. But if they're as good as we think they're going to be, that will mean nothing. And if you beat them by 5, it might lower your ranking because of how the analytics and all that margin of victory stuff works now. But there's going to be, and we'll talk about this as the summer goes on and we get deeper into our power rankings and start to predict who these teams are going to be. I think we're going to have at least 4 teams somewhat in the vicinity of the tournament this year. It's tough to call exactly who it's going to be. I'm very, very certain that 2 of the 3 between Dayton, St. Louis, and VCU are going to be really good. And so if those two are strongly in the tournament, then let's say Davidson's a bubble team, playing those two is going to really, really help.
Yeah, it could. I think it's good overall for the A-10. Although, I guess my one hesitation, when you have Dayton, St. Louis, VCU, and Alter Davidson too, they're all playing each other multiple times. That does make it tougher for them to pull ahead of the rest of the pack. It makes it more unlikely that we'll have multiple teams at 14-4, which has kind of been the magic number. Like, I even think this year, like, if Dayton goes 13-5 in a tough conference schedule, unless they knock it out of the park in the non-con, that's not going to be good enough. Same with St. Louis. So that's my one concern. Although I think the better part, like you mentioned about the GW example earlier, minimizing those quad four opportunities is key, because there's just nothing to gain for really about 5 or 6 teams in the conference this year. Playing them home or away isn't going to do anything for your resume.
And honestly, I'll counter with this. If we just have a bunch of teams going 12-6, no matter how stacked the schedule is, it just means the conference isn't that good.
Like, depends, I think, but
let's throw out an example here. St. Louis, who's getting buzz as a top 25 team in the country right now.
Mm-hmm.
If that's true, then they'd probably go like 16-2 against an old schedule and 15-3 this year. It's not really, how much is a tougher schedule going to matter? One game, maybe two. It'll screw up a seeding. Now, let's say Davidson just ends up disappointing, and they're a middle of the pack team and they have to play all the good teams at the top. Maybe they end up as the 9 seed when they rightfully should have been like the 5. But I don't think it's going to matter for teams that are deserving of a tournament spot.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think you look at Davidson last year, where I think they got a 10 seed. And a big part of that is just their strength of schedule was terrible. And I believe they had the easiest conference schedule. They played VCU twice, but that was about their only hard home and home. So this does give those four teams that we've been talking about opportunities to maybe get a high single-digit seed.
I'd say 5, because Loyola plays Dayton, St. Louis,
right,
and a potentially good George Mason team all twice.
They do. Yeah, I'm glad Loyola got a good set of games, because they should be good this year. The one issue I do have, just making it so imbalanced this year, it does make it really tough if we do get a surprise team from the bottom. Like right now, I'm looking at Rhode Island. I think they're a huge sleeper team. Their four home and homes are Fordham, George Mason, LaSalle, and UMass. So, you know, besides George Mason, there's not a lot of juice there. And, you know, it's unlikely that they get to the tournament.
UMass, I'd put in the same group as George Mason right now.
I need to remind myself who UMass's coach is now. Like, in my mind, I just still think of them as a bad team. Maybe that'll change, but still. I don't think that's going to be a Q1 game by any means. So examples like that, I think Rhode Island or, you know, even St. Bonaventure, like if they shock the world with their transfers, they don't have many chances this year. So I think that is an issue, but maybe just trying to guess who the top teams are going to be might pay off in the long run.
I mean, I'm not sure that Rhode Island's schedule is that much worse than some of the top teams the last few years when they weren't doing anything to stack the schedules. Now, if LaSalle is horrific, then that becomes a big problem. But let's say LaSalle is decent and they finish like 11th, then this is an okay schedule. And really, it's one that if Rhode Island is a true bubble team, they should just clean up against it.
Yeah.
Like, they should, if Rhode Island wants to get in the tournament this year, they're just simply going to have to finish second or third against this schedule. So for them, it's a different test. It's not as good of a test in the eyes of the committee, but just racking up wins can matter too.
Well, if we want to end this with a Power 8 hot take, I do think a second or third place finish for Rhode Island is very possible. It's probably not going to happen, but you know, with an easier go of it than some of the other teams, having Archie Miller as the coach, getting a lot of high major players into the program. I think there's a chance for something like that to happen this year. So that's my sleeper. We'll put that on the record now here in July.
I'll follow that up here. The hype is all centered around Dayton, St. Louis mostly, but then it seems to be VCU, Davidson, Loyola are kind of coalescing as a consensus 3-5. I know John Rothstein had Loyola a lot lower than that, but he is
seventh. Yeah.
He's basically the aberration at this point. Someone in this Richmond, UMass, Rhodey, George Mason, St. Bonaventure group is going to be shockingly good. History tells us that someone who's predicted like eighth is going to sneak up around the top three, possibly on the bubble. I'll go one further and say someone in that group finishes in the top three and at worst is a 1 or 2 seed in the NIT, because I think this is the best middle that the conference has had in, God, maybe a decade. And I also think it's the best top that they've had at the same time. So someone in that middle is like, you look at the talent that Rhode Island has. That's the reason you're optimistic with them. UMass has a ton of Power 5 talent too. Mason brings back Aduro and Ticket Gaines and Devon.
I'm really, Devon really Cooper, big on Mason. Yep.
And they bring in a ton of talent too. Richmond has Tyler Burton back. Like, one of these teams is just going to be really, really good. And the genius of the offseason is going to be whoever figures out which one it is.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, I mean, for me, it's Rhodey and Mason to keep an eye on from that group. And you're right. Like, it's going to take a lot of nerve, if you want to call that shot now, and say one of those teams is going to get a double bye or go to the tournament. But I think there's a good chance it happens. I think the conference is a lot more wide open than people realize. And, you know, a month into the season, everything's going to look way different than right now, where we're all talking about Dayton, St. Louis, and VCU.
I think most people are just talking about Dayton and St. Louis.
Yeah.
The only people who are talking about VCU are us and the VCU fans. So,
I mean, people should, because they're going to win the conference. So I'll put out another hot take now. It's probably they're, I don't care who's leaving their team. They're going to be so good on defense again, just like every year. And if they just get a little bit of, you know, Ace is going to take that next step, they're going to be just fine. All the concerns about VCU are way overblown.
I don't know where to go from here, because all of my scorching takes for VCU just aren't as good as that one. But
I'm believing right now, in the Rams.
I'm picking VCU to make the tournament next year. That's already done. That's locked in. Because even if the guys that I am buying in on right now don't turn out, their bench is going to be loaded and this team is going to be super deep. And so let's say Zeb Jackson maybe just doesn't turn out. Well, then they're going to have Billups on the bench. They're going to have the shooter from Division II, whose name I'm blanking on right now. The guy who came from Hartford. We'll correct that in the errors. But yeah, the Rams are going to be really good. And we both believe in Mike Rhodes. And if Mike Rhodes does his job, they will be at least on the precipice of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, if that's one message to end this on, people got to start talking about VCU. They're extremely legit this year.
Yep, we both. Oh, and they have Jameer Watkins coming back too. I don't want to leave that out.
Him too.
The VCU fans will be mad about that.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to be great. So there you go.
But yeah, we'll close out with that. VCU is going to be good. And congrats to the A-10 schedule makers for really nailing it this year and putting the good teams against each other, because who knows, if Dayton had played a slightly tougher schedule last year, they might have made the tournament. And next year, that could very well make the difference between the third team making it and not making it, or maybe even the fourth team making it or not making it. So credit to them.
All right. Well, I think you just opened the doors for the haters to say that Dayton shouldn't have lost Austin Peay, but I agree. Maybe that'll help.
Well, yeah, they shouldn't have, but it almost didn't matter anyway. So,
yep.
All right, quick error correction. David Shriver was the name that I was missing. 3-point shooter coming in from Hartford. He was there for a year after tearing it up in Division II at a small school in West Virginia for 3 seasons. One of the best shooters in the low majors last year. So thank you to everyone for listening. Thank you to Ryan Daly for joining us. Thank you to David Shriver for giving me something to have to look up in the middle of the summer and the brain fart that created. Everyone, please be sure to leave us 5 stars on iTunes if you like the pod. If you have any ideas for segments of guests that you think would be interesting and also gettable for us, please send us a message on Twitter at @3BidLeaguePod. Or if you prefer, you can shoot us an email, @3BidLeague@gmail.com. Everyone, enjoy this beautiful summer that we are having so far. And remember, TBT is right around the corner.